Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, ISIS versus Al-Qaeda, which poses a greater threat to the U.S. An expert shares his thoughts on congressional consideration of the Iran nuclear deal. We meet an immigrant chasing the American dream. And a divorce saddens the world of country music.
Say It Ain't So. I mean, they seem like the perfect couple. They're winning awards together. They've written songs together. They've written songs for other people. Just, they've always tweeted about their love for each other. So it came as a total surprise.
It's ahead on The Voice of America. FBI Director James Comey recently said the Islamic State's efforts to recruit Americans poses a greater security threat to the United States than Al-Qaeda. International Edition's Jeffrey Young spoke with terrorism expert Colin Clark with the RAND Corporation in Pittsburgh to expand on what the FBI director said, and he joins me now here in the studio. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Susan. Mr. Clark discusses how skilled the Islamic State is at using the Internet, especially social media, to both spread propaganda and recruit more terrorists.
So ISIS actually has a fairly sophisticated use of social media. As we've seen, the group uses it to broadcast things like beheadings, as it did with several Westerners that it had kidnapped. But it also uses Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook to show its humanitarian efforts, including fighters handing out ice cream cones to children in an attempt to appeal to its own constituents. So here we're talking about the use of social media not only to recruit and attract followers, but also to intimidate the West. And at the same time, galvanize support from among its constituency.
This is a pretty sophisticated use of PSYOP, psychological operations, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And ISIS has also produced several popular web series, including titles such as The Knights of Martyrdom and Risen Alive. And these emphasize the camaraderie of jihad by showing militants fighting together on the battlefield. There's also ISIS's magazine, Dabiq, which is an English-language production used to help more and more recruits.
FBI Director James Comey said that the Islamic State is willing to engage what he called unstable, troubled drug users, while Al-Qaeda is much more selective about who that they recruit. Now, what does the Islamic State gain by going to such people?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think Director Comey is right that Al-Qaeda is a bit more parsimonious in who they use to recruit. Part of that's due to, the fear of infiltration, of having individuals infiltrate the group. For ISIS, the real concern is if these individuals can't make it from the West or from the region to the battlefield, it is then saying, here, try and attack in your own home country as almost a way to vet these people to see how serious they are.
Comey also said that the Islamic State's recruitment effort through social media has really enlarged, really ramped up in the last 2 months or so. Can you offer any explanation as to why all of a sudden they're really pumping hard on this?
Yeah, so I think it has to do with perhaps the effectiveness of the airstrikes. They're losing a lot of fighters on the battlefield. And unlike terrorist groups in the past, ISIS actually controls large swaths of territory, sanctuary, and safe haven. So in order to control this territory, they need the bodies. So combined with the fact that they're losing individuals in large droves, they then have to replace those individuals to control the territory.
If you were advising the U.S. government on effective response strategies to mitigate this recruitment effort, what would you recommend?
To me, it comes down to allocation of resources. We need to get serious and devote more resources to the problem. I don't know if that comes in the form of a task force, some kind of high-level panel, but we really need to focus, and I'm not saying divert these resources from the kinetic option, because that still has to be a big piece of this, but we also need to put our money where our mouth is and devote resources to standing up a more robust effort at targeting ISIS on social media.
That was Colin Clark, associate political scientist with the RAND Corporation in Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Susan.
Michael Lippin has been looking at what social media are saying about the issue of ISIS recruiting, and he joins me here in the studio. Hi there, Michael.
Hey, Susan. Thank you. Yes, a couple of tweets about ISIS recruiting caught my attention today. Here's a post by a Twitter user, Christina Day. She is the director of digital media at Go Global, a digital media website called Go Global Media. Day's handle is at 2kday. That's the number 2 and the letters K-D-E-I. And this is what she tweeted recently. She said, hashtag ISIS is sending out recruiting spam emails to known and unknown young women in the U.S. Check with your loved ones and explain the danger. Then I found a tweet from Belle True Tangier. She is a Middle East journalist writing for British publications The Times and The Sunday Times. Tangier's handle is at Belle True, spelled B-E-L-T-R-E-W. And on Monday, she tweeted a link to a story that she wrote, along with a note saying that she interviewed ISIS fighters about a growing recruiting network from Morocco to Syria and the threat of domestic terror attacks. And lastly, I saw a tweet from the Latino service of Fox News. Its handle is at Fox News Latino. And yesterday, it tweeted a link to an Associated Press report. The tweet said, Spanish man arrested in North African enclave for recruiting women for ISIS. Well, that AP article talked about how Spanish police said they've arrested a man suspected of recruiting women to send to areas controlled by the Islamic State in Syria. It quoted an Interior Ministry official as saying, a 29-year-old Spaniard was arrested on Wednesday in Medea, which is one of two Spanish enclaves in Northwest Africa. The Spanish government statement said the man distributed recordings of pro-Islamic State speeches to try to indoctrinate recruits for ISIS. Susan?
Well, thank you very much, Michael. I appreciate that. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Scientists in Chicago have found evidence that becoming a father can make you fat. Research from Northwestern University also finds that it doesn't matter if new fathers live with their children or not. The researchers kept track of the weight of more than 10,000 men from the time when the men were adolescents until young adulthood. They found that a nearly 2 meter tall man who lives with his child gained an average of about 2 kilograms and had a 2.6% rise in his body mass index after becoming a first-time dad. Similar new fathers not living with their child gained about 1.5 kilograms and had a 2% increase in their BMI. On the other hand, a nearly 2 meter tall man who was not a father actually lost 635 grams over the same period. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz, and Treasury Secretary Jack Lew appeared Thursday before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee to explain all aspects of the nuclear deal with Iran. House Speaker John Boehner vowed Republicans, who control both houses of Congress, will spare no effort to kill the agreement. He described it as a bad deal that threatens the security of the American people. Congress has until mid-September to approve or reject the deal, which will lift sanctions in exchange for Iran scaling back its nuclear program. If the deal is rejected, President Obama has promised to veto that decision. To override the veto, it would take a two-thirds majority in both houses of Congress, meaning many members of Obama's Democratic Party would have to join Republicans in rejecting the deal. International Edition's Mohammed El-Shenawy discussed different scenarios that could emerge from congressional scrutiny of that deal with Anthony Cordesman, a prominent strategic analyst at the Center for International and Strategic Studies in Washington. And Mohammed joins me now. Hi, Mohammed.
Hi.
So what does he expect out of that congressional review, partisan fighting or constructive review?
Well, so according to Dr. Cordesman, it would be naive to assume that the next 60 days of review in Congress will not be tied to partisan politics and the 2016 presidential and congressional elections. However, he said that both Republicans as well as concerned Democrats can combine securing political gains with serving the United States' national interest.
Well, one of the key issues is simply to ensure that there is full resourcing of all of the inspection agreements, that the International Atomic Energy Agency gets all of the support in terms of technology, outside intelligence, personnel, and money that it needs to be fully effective. Another is to examine the U.S. intelligence effort to make sure that that effort provides a broad and continuing review of Iran's compliance. It can examine the so-called snapback provisions, and it can create legislation which doesn't block the agreement, but which makes it clear to Iran that if it does violate the agreement, there'll be an immediate U.S. return to sanctions.
Kurtzman also said the issue is not simply seeking 67 votes to override a presidential veto, but taking action to ensure that the agreement is properly enforced.
But some congressional leaders expressed their concern that there should be tougher measures for verification. What could the Congress do to that effect?
Kurtzman argues that Congress can use the 60 days window to give Iran some incentives not only to comply but also to improve its behavior in the region.
There are ways that it can strengthen the efforts to make the agreement work that create an incentive to Iran to comply without blocking the agreement. And it also can look very carefully at Iran's conduct and create a system where there are incentives, not simply disincentives. So if Iran moves towards a broader and improved relations with its Arab neighbors and other states in the region, if it moderates its activities in Iraq or outside Iran,
Kurtzman also advised Congress to use its review of the deal with Iran to introduce security guarantees to U.S. Arab allies to calm their concerns and provide enough extended deterrence to counter any Iranian advances.
You can offer, in broad terms, a congressional resolution saying that if Iran was to violate the agreement or not to support it and move toward nuclear warheads, the U.S. would consider, or should, offer the same kind of extended deterrence in terms of its nuclear capabilities it once offered to Europe.
Well, Mohammed, thank you so much for that extensive insight to this issue.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Coming up on International Edition, we continue our series on immigrants to the United States, and music fans are surprised by announcement of a divorce. It's time to eavesdrop on another conversation International Edition's Adam Phillips had with an immigrant to the United States, and to learn a bit about their experiences trying to make it in a new land far from their home. Hi, Adam. Who are we going to meet today?
Hi, Susan. Today we're going to meet Khadija Kabore Lamport. She came to New York from Burkina Faso, West Africa, 13 years ago, and is really making a go of it, selling homemade cosmetics and cream made from shea butter. Now, shea is a fat made from the nut of a shea tree, which grows only in Africa, and it's been used for centuries as a skin beautifier and as an anti-inflammatory balm. We were standing in her kitchen while she mixed up a batch, and she told me her business, Khadija Handmade, is finally starting to take off. But it has been a bit of a slog.
I thought it was easy to just start the business, but I realized it was difficult because I have to meet all the demands, and just to talk to the customer about the products also, it's something that I wasn't thinking of it. I was like, oh, it was easy. I just make it and I just sell it, and it's not what I was thinking. A lot of people are unfamiliar with shea. They don't know the different quality of the shea butter. There's many quality of shea butter. Never yellow. If it's yellow, it got mixed with palm oil. That's not a good shea butter for me. I buy the fat and bring them here in New York City and then make them on my own with my own ingredient. Just to smell him, it just remind me of my childhood, and I'm happy.
Do you have any advice for people who are coming here from other places who would hear this, either back home or other places in the world? Any advice that you would have for other immigrants?
I would say before you come over, just do your homework, because it is hard when you get here and you don't know what to do. Sometimes you will have some idea, but it's not the same. Sometimes we watch the movies, we read the books, and make us think like, oh my God, this is the end of the world. You know, I can just come in, I will just work, and I earn a lot of money. But this is not the case.
What is the case?
When you get here, first of all, you have to find where to live, and you need a paperwork to be able to find a job. Even if you have a papers, it's hard to find a job. So it's not easy. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult.
Do you ever want to just go back home and live?
At some point, yes. The culture, it's completely different. I will say in my hometown, everybody's open, inviting, and everybody say hello to anybody you don't know. You can even invite someone you met down the street to come over for drink or for dinner and all that. And I realize in American, it is different. Everything is private. Even your friend with them, but they still have their privacy you have to respect.
Can be lonesome.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say?
I would like to say, I'm very happy and proud to be here in the United States, because it's, you know, it's land of an opportunity, and I'm working on my share business, and hopefully I will make my dream come true.
We all hope our American dreams come true.
Me too, Susan. Khadija is a real American entrepreneur, West African style. I have no doubt at all she's going to succeed.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
What's new? A robotic bricklayer that its inventor says can place 1,000 bricks an hour. It's called Hadrian, yes, for the wall, and it's a big mobile platform stacked with bricks next to a huge cantilevered hydraulic arm that sprouts from the center of the platform, able to stretch a distance of 8.5 meters. Hadrian can work 24 hours a day, squirting mortar on bricks and placing them fast enough to build a moderately sized house every 2 days, or about 150 houses a year. This high-tech bricklayer, designed in Australia for a company called Fast Bricks Robotics, uses 3D designs of houses to program where all the bricks go before cutting and placing each of them. And the reach of the robotic arm means Hadrian doesn't have to be moved that often. The company says if Hadrian goes from a prototype to a commercially viable machine, the days of hand trowels and mortar-caked overalls may be over. I'm Todd Grosshans for VOA's What's New.
They've won awards together. They help rescue animals together. They make beautiful music together. But now they are not together. Country musicians Blake Shelton and Miranda Lambert have announced they are divorcing after 4 years of marriage. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA's Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong about the breakup, which has left fans shocked and saddened.
They are country music's power couple, but now they're a couple no more. Blake Shelton and Miranda Lambert are calling it quits. Nikki, this is shocking.
Oh,
this news
goodness.
Has shocked country music fans.
Yes.
It shocked music fans in general.
Yeah, just say it ain't so. I mean, they seem like the perfect couple. They're winning awards together. They've written songs together. They've written songs for other people. Just they've always tweeted about their love for each other. So it came as a total surprise. But they did. They released a joint statement to the
right.
Associated Press.
Right.
And it officially said, "This is not the future we envisioned. And it is with heavy hearts that we move forward separately. We are real people with real lives. With real families, friends, and colleagues. Therefore, we kindly ask for privacy and compassion concerning this very personal matter."
Now, there's been a bunch, I don't want to report rumor.
Sure.
But there's been a bunch of theories,
yes,
let's say.
Speculation
yes. as to why. Because,
right.
as you said, these two people always seem to have the twinkle in their eye for one another.
Yes.
And now, boom, all boom. Of a sudden, it dropped like a bomb.
Mine would be you. The one thing you'd rather die than
There's been allegations of infidelity.
All kinds of stuff. Yes. Now, I will say to their defense, ever since they were married, people were putting stuff out there. And they've been fighting up against that. But now that it's official, people are speculating all kinds of things. Miranda has been accused of cheating on Blake twice, one with a gentleman who's not a star, and the other one is Chris Young. And even he took to Twitter and he said, no, I have nothing to do with this. I'm friends with both of these individuals and I love them both. And so it's been sad all around. The fact that people really, I really would like the press, you know, in general, to let them go ahead and heal and go through what it is that they need to go through. But people are determined to try to figure out why they broke up. And on one level, I understand it because everything seemed fine. But on another level, I think there's a lot of conjecture and a lot of lies that are being put out there. And only time will really tell. And I think after some time, when they're ready to talk about it, I think they both will be very honest and straightforward. I say listen to the music. A lot of it is in the music.
We wish them all the best. If you want to comment on this, you can send Nikki a tweet at @VOA_music. You can send one to me at @David_DBird or at @VOA_IE. And you can also listen for Nikki's show, Country Hits USA, at www.voanews.com.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. You can listen to us anytime you want, over and over and over and over again, and entertain your whole family. Just kidding. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
According to human rights organizations and Chinese activists, in recent weeks, Chinese authorities have systematically detained, arrested, subjected to forced disappearance, held incommunicado, or questioned and released 169 lawyers, legal staff, and activists involved in peacefully challenging official policies in China. Chinese authorities detained lawyers from several law firms, including six from the Beijing Fengrai firm. The Fengrai law firm handled a number of high-profile human rights cases, including the case of jailed Uyghur scholar Ilham Tohati. The crackdown began on July 9th when Fengrai lawyer Wang Yu disappeared after alerting friends via a text message that her internet connection and electricity had been cut off and that people were trying to break into her home. Wang had represented several clients involved in human rights activism or religious freedom issues, including practitioners of Falun Gong, a religious group banned in China. The firm's director, Zhu Shifeng, was also detained. He had represented Zhang Miao, a Chinese journalist who'd reported on the Hong Kong democracy protests. Among those who have not been heard from since being detained is well-known lawyer Lu Heping. He represented fellow lawyer and blind activist Chen Guangcheng and helped victims of forced evictions. The United States is deeply concerned that the broad scope of China's new national security law is being used as a legal facade to commit human rights abuses. The U.S. strongly urges China to respect the rights of all its citizens and to release all those who have recently been detained for seeking to protect the rights of Chinese citizens.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.